We're here on location for a special EWTN bookmark on the set of a new series from EWTN, Authentically Free at Last, coming soon to EWTN to talk with Father Andrew Apostoli about Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, Servant of All. And we'll talk about his cause for beatification, the new DVD that's out about him, and the documentary we're showing here on EWTN, and some books that Archbishop Sheen has authored. Always great to have you here.
Thank you, Father Andrew. Thank you.
You know, you're a man of many talents. We get to talk to you about the works of mercy and your works, obviously, with the CFRs, but you're heavily involved with Bishop Sheen as well. You'll be featured this week on Sunday Night Prime with Father Benedict,
That's right.
Talking about Bishop Sheen and talking about, and I'll just talk right away about that new documentary, Servant of All, which we finally have gotten to air here on EWTN, and we really invite everyone to check it out. Look for our airtimes here, because it's really a fabulous documentary on a great figure of the American church, right?
Yes, it is a very, very fine presentation of his sort of his life. People who knew him, gives you real insights into him as a real person. You know, you get behind the image that many people saw, they know from TV or, you know, external things about him, but didn't know about his inner life and the depth of this great man. It's just amazing.
Right. We're here, it's Advent, it's in December, and we're talking about Bishop Sheen. What's the connection to December for Bishop Sheen?
Well, the great connection is that December 9th was the day he died. He always, you know, he always prayed to die on the Feast of Our Lady, or on a Saturday. You know,
really?
He always wanted that. Yeah, he used to say if he didn't, he said the Lord's going to have to answer for that, you know. But he died on the feast. Now it's the feast of St. Juan Diego. And, you know, I have a little thought about this. This is my own private thought on this. You know, Pope John Paul II had declared that Our Lady of Guadalupe and St. Juan Diego formed the greatest evangelization team of all time. Remember, in 10 years, I think it was something like 9 million of the Native Americans, the Aztecs and Mayan Indians in Mexico, embraced the faith. Mm-hmm. And of course, Juan Diego was showing the Tilma, and of course, the Tilma was Our Lady took that initiative to appear. And I often wondered, wouldn't it be beautiful to have Bishop Sheen, if he had his day, his feast day, if it was made the 10th, which would be the day after, he also loved Our Lady, and he was a great evangelist. Right. So you've got another, it would form like another team of Bishop Sheen with Our Blessed Lady. But we're celebrating this year the 32nd anniversary of his death. And, you know, although he is no longer physically with us, bodily with us, his words continue to speak on and still influencing so many people. And many people who pray to him are receiving wonderful
blessings. Right, and you have a personal connection with him for your priesthood, right?
I do. I remember as a little boy watching him on television, my old Italian grandfather used to say, "Watch this man." You know, I don't know how much he understood, but I think he was impressed with the cape and all of that. But when I was a deacon, I was up in Geneva, New York, which is in the Diocese of Rochester, and it was around November 1966, that word came through that our new bishop was Bishop Fulton J. Sheen. And at first I didn't believe it. I said, well, they're going to send him up here?
Because he was an auxiliary in New York, right?
That's right. And it was after the council. And I think Pope Paul VI wanted to give him an opportunity to be what we call an ordinary head of the diocese. So he told us, he visited our friary when he made a little visit to Geneva in December. He said that they offered him two archdioceses in five dioceses, but he chose Rochester, you know, and he came there. He was bishop there for 3 years.
Did he say why he chose Rochester?
He said because he said it had the reputation for very good priests, and that was the thing. He wanted to work with the priests and so on. You know, he was very dedicated to the priesthood. He did put a lot of things that the council was asking for into practice. I think he felt sort of an obligation that maybe he could be an example to
model,
other American bishops,
right.
not to be afraid to do this. I think he was the first one to have the pastoral council or senate, no, pre-senate. I'm sure he was the first bishop to have a pre-senate.
Right.
So he did that, and then on March 16, 1967, he ordained me a priest, and it was just unbelievable that I not only to meet him, but to be ordained by him. And he inspired me through his works, especially his book on The Priest Is Not His Own. That I read that, and I really felt I learned about the priesthood, and some of the remarks that he made in the homily stuck with me all these years.
Let me ask you. You saw him as you said, as a kid growing up. You saw him on TV. What was your impression of him the first time you met him? When he came to that rectory
in
Geneva. Right?
He was just himself. He was very, very nice. He was very pleasant. And, you know, we asked him to pose in a picture, and he did. And we're asking all kinds of questions. You see, he was supposed to leave Geneva around 1 o'clock, and it was 3 o'clock that he got there. I hadn't seen him that morning. I was out in a parish, different parish preaching in a different town. And I thought I had missed him because he was going to leave by 1. But he came, and he just took his time. He found out the brothers were there. He wanted to spend a little time with us. And that was when my director asked him, he said, Brother Andrew, would you ordain him? And he said yes, and he kept that promise and became a great inspiration to me. I met him sometime later on a few occasions. One occasion he was preaching, giving a talk at West Point. Mm-hmm. And, he went behind the stage, and afterward I went behind to say hello to him. And he was just so grateful. He said, it was a time when priests were leaving, a number of priests were leaving. And he said, I'm glad to see you remain faithful. And, he encouraged me in that.
Right.
And,
Now, it's interesting because you think, here's Bishop Sheen, this powerful speaker, anti-communist on the 50s and everything on television. Really the first media evangelist for the church, certainly. Right. And then you've got someone who's the role model for rolling out Vatican II. In a diocese, in a lot of ways. And at the same time, near the end, he was one of the early voices, right, that was out there warning about maybe some of the exaggerations, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he did. I believe it was in 1979, the year that he died, he told some bishops, he said, if you don't clean up the problems in the seminaries, this is in 20 years, you're going to have a major crisis. And that's exactly what happened. He was a very prophetic person. Mm-hmm. One of his TV shows, he actually foretold the death of Stalin. Mm-hmm. And remember, his shows were live shows, and he had chosen as the theme of that television program, Life is Worth Living, that series. He chose the theme of that particular program. He took it from Shakespeare. It was about Julius Caesar, the death of Caesar. Right. And he changed all the names in Shakespeare and put the communist names. Mm-hmm. So Lenin, Stalin, Chernenko, and Khrushchev, and all those guys. And at the end of the program, he went right up to the camera, and he said, and yes, Mr. Stalin, your day will come, and it will come very soon. Mm-hmm. And 5 days later, Stalin had a massive stroke. Mm-hmm. And 4 days later, he was dead.
Right.
So he was very prophetic. I've met several people over the years who have told me that he said things to them. Well, the new bishop in Trenton, he was a seminarian, and the bishop visited the seminary, and as a seminarian, he was helping the bishop getting ready for Mass, and the bishop said to him, someday you're going to be a bishop.
Really?
And he's now the bishop. He was the president of Catholic University until recently.
Oh, sure, yeah, of course.
He became Bishop of Trenton, and he said that Bishop Sheen told him, he said, you're going to be a bishop. And Bishop Sheen had that happen in his own life, you know.
And he's a religious priest, too, who's actually became a...
Is that what, I don't know too much about him, but I do know he had gotten that. So it's he seemed to be a prophet. I've had people...
You also told me a story on another occasion, I think, you were talking about even kind of his prophetic vision related to things like birth control and stuff like that.
That's right. He made a statement in 1952. He said, if we accept contraception, birth control, he said, abortion, euthanasia, and violence will follow. And people said to him, oh, that could never happen in America. We've got it all now,
That's right.
Because, you see, he says, once you become used to having pleasure with contraception, pleasure but no responsibility, well, then if a child is conceived that you don't want, you're going to demand abortion.
Right.
And once you start getting used to a life with no cares, no worries, no responsibilities, well, then you don't want the handicapped, you don't want the elderly, severely sick around. Euthanasia becomes important. And then what happens, and you see it increasing in our society, nobody talks anymore about the respect of life.
Right.
And so violence. People are not taught. People have no no more respect for life. Many, many people in our society, not all, but if, you know, because they're not being taught this in
their families. Right, because if there's no sacred, there's no sacredness of life, right?
That's right. Then the people would say, well, then why are you having abortions if there's no sacred, if for each life is sacred, you know?
Right, right.
See? So they can't say certain things because right. abortion is so...
And even what you said before, the idea of the culture we live in today where people have the right to do everything but aren't responsible for anything.
That's correct. Yeah, and that's just seems to be an increasing sense. And this is why they're creating, you know, they have this, as Pope Benedict calls it, the tyranny of relativism. Mm-hmm. I'm making up my own laws. I'm my own law unto myself. What I want to do, I can do. I have the right to do this. And, of course, it's creating havoc in the mm-hmm. society. Society right. really, it's crushing from within. Bishop Sheen, in his book on Peace of Soul, he says this, he makes a remark. He says America will never be destroyed from without. It's too mm-hmm. powerful. If it falters, it will always falter from within. He said it will commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see so many signs around us. The right. society can't keep going. It's going to collapse.
Right, right. And let me ask you just in talking about Bishop Sheen and the documentary which we're showing mm-hmm. this week on EWTN. What kind of reaction, because this is the first time we're showing, but the DVD has been out for a while, and I know you had like Paris showings and things like that. What has been the reaction, the feedback to this, and has it helped in promoting Bishop Sheen's cause?
Oh, absolutely. I have to say, Doug, that I think people leave, you know, after seeing that movie, it's very stirring. I mean, very, first of all, informative. You see a part of his life. But you get behind the media personality and so on, and you see a real person, mm-hmm. and you see his kindness. And he had his faults. He'll admit his greatest fault was vanity, mm-hmm. you know, and he admitted it himself. But very, very, very vain people would never admit that. Mm-hmm. It'd be too vain to do that. Right. But he admitted it. He struggled with right. it.
Well, in a lot of ways, it's a great gift to know what you're...
Oh, what your weaknesses are.
Bizarre,
oh,
yeah, right? Because yeah. that allows you to deal with them better.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he did suffer a lot from some jealousy. Mm-hmm. You know, people would be jealous. I mean, I got a letter one time from a lady, and she says, I was walking behind him down in, you know, one of the streets mm-hmm. in Manhattan, you know, and I thought it was him. I ran ahead of him, turned around, and I said, yes, and she's like jumping and, you know, all excited. Mm-hmm. And imagine, you get that everywhere you go. I mean, it's going to work on your head.
Sure,
at some
right,
point,
right.
you're going to start to think, you know, maybe I am pretty good, you know, or something.
Right.
But I think, you know, he used to say later on when people praised him as a great preacher, he would say, no, it all comes from my hour before the Blessed mm-hmm. Sacrament. Remember, he kept that hour.
Right, very and really was a great promoter of Eucharistic adoration.
That's right.
Even into a period of time where, you know, and in a lot of ways, you know, Mother Angelica really picked up his mantle on that.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, sometimes he preached retreats and people would say, well, I don't have an hour to go waste in church and so mm-hmm. on like that. And, you know, he'd become sarcastic and he would say, go waste an hour before the Blessed Sacrament. You know, as if we didn't waste time doing so many other...
Well, isn't that the amazing thing? There's so many things in life that we do. But yet it's like, well, I really don't have time to get to Mass, and I really don't have time to pray, and I have time to watch a football game, I have time to lay on the couch, I have time to do a million other things
right.
that aren't nearly as important to my life.
Yeah, the priorities are out of order, see. With him, God was first, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, when he was baptized, you know, by the way, most people don't know that, but his name was not Fulton.
Right, right.
He was baptized Peter John Sheen. And the day he was baptized, his mother dedicated him, by the way, to the Blessed Mother.
Right.
And
he always remember said, that from the book, right?
Remember that?
The book
and
on
he,
his life, right?
He said it was like a magnet drawing him to mm-hmm. Our Lady. And the interesting thing is that the name Fulton yeah. was his mother's maiden name. See, he was the oldest of four sons. Three of them came like one right after the other. So the mother had her hands full, and especially with young Fulton, because he was colic. And mm-hmm. so he cried a lot. In fact, people referred to him as the baby who didn't stop crying, you
right.
know.
Yeah.
So the maternal grandparents, to do their daughter a favor, would often come and stroll him around the little town of El Paso, Illinois.
Yeah, I always hear El Paso and realize, oh, Texas, no, Illinois.
Illinois, okay. Right. It's a little town. I've been there. And And as they would stroll him through the streets, all the people would say, well, now this is Fulton's kid. This is Fulton's kid. Well, he liked that name, Fulton.
I see. And okay.
His grandfather took him to the Catholic school to sign up, you know, as to begin school there in the Cathedral of St. Mary's, the school there. And the nun asked, what's his name? And the grandfather said, it's Fulton. Mm-hmm. So that name stuck.
Right.
And years later, they said to him, people would say to him, there's no Saint Fulton. He said, not yet.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if he had a premonition.
So maybe he had a premonition about that too.
Yeah.
And of course, that's all in the documentary. We really invite people to watch that and catch that on EWTN this week. And of course, this is a book show, so you don't escape without talking about, and Bishop Sheen wrote so many books.
66.
66 books.
Yeah.
And we don't have time for all of those, but we have time to talk to you about a couple of them. And one of the ones that we haven't talked about in the past that we picked out, that our producer Lee South picked out for us to talk about, was Three to Get Married. And this one really hit home with me because those who might know my kind of reversion story know it had something to do with Marriage Encounter and my wife and I going on a weekend and really walking away with that idea that marriage takes three, and that for it to work, you really have to put God at the center of your marriage. And then you look at this book, Three to Get Married, and it's all laid out there for you. And this is a book that came out in the early 1950s, I think in 51, in fact.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to really, get people to be educated in his teachings, along with the Theology of the Body by Pope John Paul II. But he has so many powerful insights. As I was reading that book, so many things were striking me. And, he distinguishes between, what's happened in our society is that so much of the emphasis is simply on the pleasure, that the spouse no longer becomes important. And we see that. We see the effect that pornography has had to increase the making a person just simply an absent object, in other words, unimportant.
Right.
When he says that people focus on the pleasure, the experience, and no longer see the person. Mm-hmm. And of course, for a woman being treated that way, if she's being taken for granted, she's going to realize that.
Right.
My husband might do this with someone else. I wouldn't count if he doesn't respect me and love me through this act. So this, the wholesomeness and the fullness of that action of sexual relations requires a love for the person.
Right. And also, I would think in some ways, if there's these alternate ways for one to find self-gratification, then one doesn't have to worry about the relationship as much.
That's right.
And so it can become easier for to not, in a sense, be self-donating your relationship, because I don't need to keep this relationship at this level because I don't need this level of intimacy because I found another way.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
To be gratified.
Yeah, and that's so sad. It's happening. It's part of the selfishness that we see growing in our society, the narcissism, and that's why we really need to learn how to have a giving in our love instead of receiving, just simply taking.
Right.
There's so much taking.
Well, and this one jumped out at me, 19, for better or for worse, in erotic or selfish love, the burdens of others are regarded as impeding one's own happiness. But in Christian love, burdens become opportunities to serve.
That's right. Right. If there's no serving love, if love ends up simply as, you fulfill my need, I take, that love will never reach the level which God intended for it. Because if the Lord is not in the third person in that marriage, is God's love, and that's the love that authenticates even the human love. It makes it real. See, because if we have a love that simply turns back in on ourselves, it's not giving anymore, you're going to end up selfish and empty inside.
And we talk about having a relationship with Jesus Christ. If we can't have a relationship with our spouse, how can we have a relationship with Jesus Christ, or vice versa?
Right. He would, for selfish people, he limits what they want, and that's why they reject him. Mm-hmm. He has a very interesting comment he makes in one of the chapters there about, said someone who might say, I'm not going to be a Catholic anymore. I can't I can't accept the doctrine of transubstantiation. Mm-hmm. He says that really means I can't accept the sixth commandment. Mm-hmm. They get married, living in an adulterous relationship.
Right. And that's three to get married. Highly recommended. The world's first love, Mary, Mother of God. This opens up with dedicated to the woman I love. And he'd always play off of that, talking about the woman he loved, and people would be like, oh,
shocked.
How is he doing this? And he was always talking about Our Lady.
But
she really, really was special to him, right?
Oh, yes. Of all his 66 books, Doug, that was his favorite. That was his favorite book,
okay.
Because it was about Our Lady. And he has such beautiful insights in there. One of the ones he mentions when he says, God, in his mind, God in his infinite mind, he has two images of everyone. Mm-hmm. See, he has an image of what they are now. He sees us just as we are. And we're struggling with our sins and our imperfections and so on, self-love and areas that need to be purified. And as we go on in life and maybe in purgatory before we can get to heaven. But then he has an image of what we will be in heaven, a perfection. But he says for Mary, he had only one image because she was always perfect in her love, even through her life, And so, it's such a beautiful thought that, how much, he said how much God longed to create her. He couldn't wait, in a sense, God couldn't wait to create Mary because she would be such a beautiful image of his love that he could give that love to her and receive that love from her,
Well, the priest who actually wrote the foreword to this particular Ignatius edition.
Yeah, I've known him all my life.
Right. I think he's got the same name as you. And he says that you talk about the fact about his Archbishop's Marian love and dedication kind of being reflected in the fact that when he was consecrated a bishop in June 11th of 1951, he chose as the motto in his coat of arms, "Grant that I may come to you through your mother."
That's his motto, right? In the Latin, it reads, Da per matrem me venire. Yes, grant that I may come to you through your mother, because I think everything he wanted to do, Mary was a part of that. I mentioned that he had been dedicated to Our Lady. He renewed that dedication on the day of his first Holy Communion and also the day of his ordination. He prayed his rosary with the family. The family often prayed the rosary. He prayed it every day. He was very faithful to that. And so Mary became such a beautiful part of that. And that's why in choosing that coat of arms, it just says so much, grant that I may come to you.
Right. I wonder, hearing that, it's very much like De Montfort. Do you ever read anything about his relationship
I don't remember where he quotes. I'm sure it's St. Louis de Montfort is in the back of his mind.
Right.
And the one other thing on that book, just before we leave, the chapter, I recommend to the people, if they can get that book, the chapter on the Muslims, he talks about Fatima and Our Lady. See, he said, you got to believe that Our Lady did not come down out of heaven to the only place in all of Portugal with a Muslim name, because Fatima had been the name of Muhammad's first daughter, and it was the name of a princess who, when the Muslims controlled Portugal, they were finally driven out, and then as they were leaving, this princess stayed behind. She married a prince and became a Christian. And when she died a year later, and a man missed her so much, he became a Cistercian monk, and he asked to have her relic. He was sent to a little hermitage, and he asked to have her relics, or her remains, not relics, remains, buried in that area. And that's how the name Fatima got attached there. And the bishop said, the Blessed Mother didn't come to that one place in all of Portugal with a Muslim name just to convert Russia. He said, unless we have the conversions of hundreds of millions of Muslims, he said, there'll never be world peace. And he said, the closest we have come is Our Lady of Fatima.
Okay, and that's the world's first love, Mary, Mother of God. And just before we go, we don't have time to go through this book, obviously, but it's a classic, Life of Christ by Fulton J. Sheen. And it's interesting, and what struck me too about this is you recently kind of have our own Holy Father with his Jesus of Nazareth.
Yes.
Volumes, his two volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you kind of view Bishop Sheen's telling of, what's kind of unique about his telling of the life of Christ?
Well, he gives you so many insights into the meaning. He draws hidden meanings or meanings that could easily be passed over. And he just sort of makes the gospel really come alive. There's so many insights there. Because remember, he was very well read. He had deep perception. Plus, he was a very faithful and devout man. And much of the fruit of his writings was the fruit of his prayer,
right.
You know, before the Blessed Sacrament. So what you're reading there is not simply an intellectualization or purely historical critical approach. It's something of a man who believes deeply,
right.
And shares insights.
And is really writing from his heart.
That's right.
Right, really writing from his heart. Yeah. And we are, unfortunately, just out of time for this special edition of Bookmark, and we've got the ability to touch on a couple of his fine works, talk a little bit about the cause, also mention the fact that we've got our documentary, Servant of All, which is airing this week on EWTN, and people can look for you as well, airing on with Father Benedict Groeschel, your confrere, on Sunday Night Prime. And we also, since we are in Advent and Christmas, we also on EWTN's religious catalog actually offer a book of reflections for Advent and Christmas with Fulton J. Sheen. And of course, all of these things are available through the EWTN religious catalog. And I just wanted to personally thank you for all your fine work.
Well, thank
you. Cause of Bishop Sheen.
And then thank you, Doug, personally, for all your support over the years. And especially, I wish to really acknowledge and thank EWTN for how much they've done to really promote the cause of Bishop Sheen. Do you realize in 10 years, we've come to the point where now they're studying the Positio for his virtues? If they approve it, the theologians have already approved it. It has to be studied by a group of bishops. If they approve it and the Pope does, we move on to the possible miracles.
Well, with that, we're going to have to move on. Thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank
Father
you,
Andrew Apostoli, talking all about Bishop Sheen. We have some books. We have the DVD, all available through the EWTN religious catalog. Thank you for joining us on this special Bookmark edition.